Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Paranormal Pendle Podcast, coming to you from the heart of Pendle Witch Country in the northwest of England. My name is Craig Bryant, author, investigator and collector of stories. Join me as we take a journey into the paranormal, UFO sightings, cryptozoology and big cats. This is the Paranormal Pendle Podcast. Welcome to episode 31 of Paranormal Pendle, broadcasting to the Paranormal UK Radio Network at paukradio.com. So this is the first episode of 2023, and as some of you may know, 2022 was a difficult year, and I appreciate all the support I've received through social media and the many lovely emails I received towards the end of the year as I decided to take a break from all things podcast. Now, hopefully the wait will be worth it, as I've got a fantastic guest on this episode, and I've also got a number of really great guests lined up over the next few months. So before I introduce my guest for this podcast, I'd just like to mention one of PA UK's driving forces, Mark Johnson, who is over the pond from where I live in the UK. If you're listening, Mark, I just want to wish you all the best for the new year. I know you've had a very difficult time. You know where we all are if you need us. And chin up, my friend. And let's hope that 2023 is a good year for everybody. Okay, so my guest on this episode is Chris Whitehouse. So I interviewed Chris back in September. And since then, he's had a book published. And I'm hoping that he's also got some more spooky stories of his investigations that he's undertaken since we last spoke. So first of all, Chris, welcome and a happy new year.
Happy new year, my friend. I'm glad to see you better.
Thank you. Yeah, I had a little bit of the old lurgy, as we call it. I had COVID, unfortunately, in November. So that was particularly unpleasant. If anybody tells you it's just a bad cold, they're not telling you the full story. Raring to go, hopefully. You know, as I say, I've got some great guests lined up, and obviously you're the first one of this year. So that's brilliant. It's great to talk to you again. Okay, so let's start off then. Do you want to tell us, first of all, about your book? What it's called, obviously, what the motivation behind writing it was. And what it's all about.
Yeah, sure. So Into the Darkness, Becoming a Ghost Hunter is my book. It's not in shops other than Amazon. So you get the paperback on Amazon and then the Kindle version on Amazon, obviously. So yes, the motivation for that was, well, I'd done write-ups ever since doing the team. I'd dictated, I would record it, then dictate it. And that would be my evidence that I would keep. You know, the Ouija board, the Gauss readings, the temperature changes. And that was a very scientific approach 12 years ago now. So I had always been a want-to-be writer, but never really finished anything and never did anything that amounted to anything other than what I enjoyed. But then I noticed that I'd always finished my write-ups because there was a 2 or 3 hour, you know, piece to write. And sometimes the better investigations got more word counts because I was enjoying it. And I thought, oh, I should probably put those write ups together into a book. And I thought, no, that's not what I want to do. They're already up. They're already out there floating about on the internet. I thought, I'll just start from scratch. I'll talk about my youth and tell of my journey. So this book documents my journey from being a child, loving the paranormal, any experiences I had, more so in my early 20s, but the youthful ones that put me on the journey. Then a house that I didn't like and freaked me out and had experiences there. Through to finally starting a team, skeptically. And yeah, there's some write-ups, so like dictations, part of the write-ups in there, but I expand on my thoughts and feelings. And it goes right up to COVID, really, when we stopped. And now I'm starting to write the second book, which will be the few 4 years or whatever after that, you know, began. So,
okay. Yeah. So what was it then that first got you interested all those years ago in the paranormal?
I had an experience when I was a child where I had the covers whipped off me in the middle of the night, and I looked to see a black shape hovering at the end of my bed with its arms out, and it's sort of hovering like a gingerbread man formation, arms and legs out. And that really terrified me. And then obviously you're sort of saying to other people in the school playground, I've had a ghostly experience. Have you ever had one? No, I haven't, but I'm into ghosts. Well, yeah, so am I. And I want to learn more about it and find, you know, I was just into it in a very vague sense. I don't remember discovering the paranormal, but I do remember that first encounter. And then, just basically, I guess I always wanted answers and I was intrigued by it. And I was very much of a loner child, and the house that we lived in at that time gave me nightmares. And I'm not going to be saying, oh, I'm a sensitive, I'm a psychic. That's not where this is going. It's more, I'm just a regular person without those gifts, and still like, oh, I, you know, that was even probably worse, because I was like, am I imagining it? Mm. Or, you know, maybe I was a fearful child. And obviously as you grow up, time passes and you start to think, I must have just been a scared child. Like, you know, people, kids are afraid of the dark and stuff.
Yeah.
And, yeah. But batted it away, really. Yeah. And then eventually,
I suppose it's the imagination, isn't it, of children, really, that that can sometimes, you can sort of scare yourself, can't you, at that age?
Yeah. Yeah. Especially wandering around when you're small and everything's big.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? And when I told my two brothers and my parents, I saw a ghost last night. I was terrified. Mm. All four of them, just as you would, be like, no, you didn't. You were dreaming.
Right.
You know, when your kid comes down and tells you, you're like, well, you probably had a nightmare. And, you know, I'd even do it myself. You'd say, you probably didn't. But so, yeah, that really bugs me, because I was like, I totally get why you're saying that. But on this occasion, I did.
So did they never see anything in the house then, or did they never admit to seeing anything in the house?
They kind of agree that it was a weird place. It was two houses knocked through into one long one, and downstairs we had a bakery, so it was a shop essentially.
Okay.
And upstairs was where we lived. But subsequently, we're talking a couple of decades later, I'm working and I meet a guy who says, oh, you're from Cullingworth, aren't you? I said, oh, yeah. And he said, and he was like, it turns out we used to live in our house. So before us, and this guy's probably 25 years older than I was.
Right.
And so he was like, ooh, it was really freaky. I didn't like it.
Oh,
and
right.
Suddenly I'm like, well, I'm the kid. I can understand not liking it. He's much more, he was the dad of the house.
Yeah.
He was like, I didn't like it. And that wasn't at all, because a girl who was on my street as a young teen, she ended up working there when it was all being refurbished. It was a nursery for children. And she was like the cleaner, and all of her cleaning products and supplies were in what was my mother's bedroom, along the dark corridor that I didn't like. And she said, my mother and me and other staff don't like going into that end room. It's like, exactly. So that really compounded it for me, that I wasn't being daft, you know.
Yeah. There's definitely something going on in the house. Yeah. I mean, did this gentleman give you sort of any other indications of things that maybe he'd seen or hadn't seen
anything. He was just scared, unnerved.
Yeah.
Because I didn't like it. I didn't feel at home. And I was like, well, that's interesting, you know.
Yeah. So it was the atmosphere then more than
yeah. anything. He wasn't thinking, oh, this is home sweet home. You know, some places, yeah. I guess you just don't settle into.
No, that's very true. So when you you said that you sort of as you grew up, then when you got into your 20s, you started to take more of an interest. You had, did you say you had some more experiences in your 20s?
I moved out from my mother's and got my own house. Now, this house was not one that I wanted. It was given to me as part of a little bit of a deal. My grandma knew a lady, an old lady, who was selling up, not because she wanted to, but because she was going into a home. And it was like, oh, okay, well, we'll try and get a bit of a deal off her. Say, look, it's for my grandson. Can you knock a few grand off or whatever?
Mm.
So it seemed like the obvious choice, whether I liked it or not, that I'd be stupid to not take it as my first house. And it was one of those houses, like going to visit your grandma in the 70s or something, where all the furniture were just old lady.
Yeah.
And all the walls were old lady, the carpets. Mm. And there was just no getting out of it. You know, I'm 20, about to turn 21, in a really old lady's house. I was just like, huh, I do not like this, but I guess we'll make something of it, you know?
Yeah.
So that feeling from the off, great having my own space. But anyway, then things started to take a turn for the weird. Now, I did have months probably, of getting used to the neighbours, getting used to the creaking of the house and the floorboards, and knew what to discount.
Mm.
Bearing in mind that I was deep into Most Haunted, you know, programmes like that, anything ghostly, and always had been. So that was always a factor. Once you're watching programmes like that, you're not very happy going to bed in the dark and taking the lights off. I was definitely like that, which is weird because I'm the opposite now. But, I wasn't the ghost hunter I am. I was a ghost interest person, but definitely I'll probably watch something else before I go to bed, you know.
Mm. Yeah, I remember myself and my wife lived in a very old cottage type house. Well, they call it cottage. It was a two down weaver's house cottage, really. And we used to watch Most Haunted. And there were a number of times where I didn't feel like going upstairs on my own to the bathroom. You know, it was, even though it was, you know, we know it was for entertainment purposes. There was definitely an atmosphere about it. And I do remember the one that they did at Pendle Hill. Probably it was one Halloween, probably about, I don't know, must be about 15 years ago now. I think it's actually out there on YouTube somewhere. And that was quite interesting because obviously it was in an area that I knew very well and I know very well. But there were definitely times where I was scared to sort of go upstairs to the bathroom on my own after watching it. Again, I think it was the house, as you say, you know, you get a feeling from the house. And we certainly got a feeling from that house as well. And as it transpired, there were things going on, but that's a different story. So again, it was a sort of feeling with you. Was there actually anything that you saw, anything physical, or was it just a feeling that something wasn't quite right?
I would watch whatever I was watching and go to bed. And then I would hear like a noise from downstairs, voices. And so I'd get up and walk down and see that the TV was on, like 1 a.m.
Right.
And be like, well, I turned it off and went to bed.
Mm.
And it's unnerving that when you're stood alone and there's no lights on, you know, the TV's lighting up the front room and you're like, well, okay, that's weird. But maybe there's a timer that I've knocked on to come on. But I'm thinking, a timer to come on? I know this timer's to go off.
Yeah.
So anyway, you're on your own, so it's like, well, I'm not going to go down the spooky. It's like, okay, whatever. I'm not scared. I'm going back to bed.
Yeah.
You know? But then it would happen maybe a week later. I'd go to bed. Maybe I wouldn't get woken in the night, but I'd come down and my remote control, which I always have by my side, would be right in the middle of the room between the couch and the TV. And I'd be like, well, I didn't put that there.
Mm.
So then, you know, you're starting to think, is there something here? But I don't want to admit it out loud to the house. But these escalated to the point where I turned my cellar into a makeshift cinema, bought a projector, painted the wall white, put a little futon down there, and I got all my videos and DVDs. So I would descend to the bottom of the house and hear, like, walking in the lounge and think it was my friend coming to watch a film with me.
Mm.
And the thing was, I'd hear him pull up normally, open my door, walk through, down the stairs, hello, friend. You know, that's the normal thing. But this one time I'm hearing walking, but I didn't hear the front door open. And then walking across above my head. And then silence. And I'm like, well, he must be stood still, like looking at my CDs or something. And I'm like, I'm shouting up and down here. Nothing. So I'm about to go up and I hear his car pull to a close outside my house and the front door go. And I'm like, I thought you were just here. He said, no, I've just got here. So it starts like that. I'm like, well, I've literally just heard the same noise you've just made, but before you came. And we'd sit in the cellar, and halfway through a film, the cellar door would just open. And it got regular when I was on my own. And obviously I'm like, wind, the vacuum effect. That's the first option. That's what I'm trying to convince myself.
Yeah.
But then he would be sat next to me and it'd open maybe like the eighth time and he'd finally witness it. And I remember saying to him to calm him down because I'm into ghosts and he isn't. Mm. I look at him and I'm like, oh, don't worry. It happens all the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm in control of it. It's friendly, whatever. Whatever I meant by that, just like, just watch the film. Don't worry about it. But then the door in my cellar wouldn't completely fit in nice, like a normal door shuts correctly. This kind of wedged into the frame. You could really pull it into the frame, but it was like, oh, well, it's wedged that hard, half shut, that it's fine. One time I left the cellar to make a cup of tea or something, I can't quite remember, and I pulled it shut more so than usual and said, try and open that then, as I'm confidently trying to regain my confidence of I'm in charge here.
Mm.
Went upstairs and I just heard this and the door, like, you know, be pulled out of its socket and open, and I just flew through the lounge up the stairs, up the second set of stairs into the attic, and thought, well, I'm cornered now. You know, I've got to go down. That's my only option. And this silence, you know, I'm thinking, what is about to happen? Mm. Nothing. Just a very imposing. Well, I felt like I communicated with something then. I felt like I was having a two-way, you know, battle in the world. But throw into the mix when I'd suddenly smell gas.
Right.
And I'm like, well, that's weird. Now, this happened on about three occasions, and I finally debunked that. When I was opening the fridge, it was 90 degrees to the cooker, and the fridge door would whack the hob buttons in and twist it.
Right. All right.
I debunked that. So I'm in this field of, am I just imagining it? Am I getting this ghost thing in my head because I'm into ghosts?
Mm.
And not a ghost here, you know. So, but then they'd be like, I'd be hung over and I would be sat in the middle of the floor rewinding a video cassette, waiting to watch a film. And I'm sort of resting my eyes like, oh my God, I feel rough, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I've opened my eyes and there's a mouse, a dead mouse in front of me, its tail straight out, that wasn't there 30 seconds ago.
Right.
And it was like, that, yeah, that you might think, well, that's just a mouse you didn't spot. It's like it literally wasn't there.
Mm.
And then another day, there'd be a bird in my living room. And I'm like, where did a bird? Why is there suddenly a bird in my living room?
Mm.
You know, I'll open a window. I'm a blinds shut, windows closed hermit of a guy. You know. And so how did a bird get in? And that mouse, you know, these things were like weird.
Did you have an open fireplace? Did you have an open chimney?
No. So then my girlfriend at the time was around and she was completely sceptical. And one morning I go down to make a cup of tea and there's a bat in my front room and it's summertime. And I'm like, well, why is a bat out in the day? Why is it in my house? You know, these animal things. I'm like, is this a message? I don't know what the message was, but I felt like something was trying to say something to me, and I still don't know. Then there were two sightings, but not by me.
Okay.
When I was moving out to live with said girlfriend, I get my joiner friend in to laminate my floor. And you know how you do a house up to sell.
Yeah.
Essentially, he's working away and starts leaving. Can't remember whether they'd gone down which staircase he won, whether it was on the staircase to the cellar or the staircase to the front room. But either way, he comes across a woman coming towards him on the stairs.
Okay.
And I thought it was scary at the time, but I asked him in research for my book, and he said, no, the feeling I got wasn't a fear, was a welcoming feeling. And she was like middle-aged, but his reaction was, God damn it. And he just ran. He got in his car and then brought his dad back, said, I've just seen a woman at Chris's house, but I need to get my tools, and I'm not going there on my own. And he never came back.
Right.
Right.
So did you ever get your floor laminated then?
I did.
Good, well, it was a happy ending to that. I was fascinated about that woman. So you said there were two sightings. Was the second sighting the same one?
Well, the second sighting was my sceptical, completely unbelieving to become wife. In the middle of the night, she goes to use the toilet and she looks down the stairs for whatever reason, because it was like simply a metre stride from bedroom to toilet.
Yeah.
But she goes, I felt compelled to just have a glance downstairs. And she saw what she thought was a woman walking up the stairs. But she was continuing her motion. She glanced, and next thing you know, her head was in the bathroom. And she's like, I know I thought I just saw a woman, but I didn't. And I don't want Chris telling me you saw a ghost. So she stepped back out and she's going, I'm going to find out what I did see, whether it was coats hanging up, whether it was the shadow, because we had wobbly walls, badly skimmed walls. And she's like, you know, I couldn't see anything. It was just a clear shot down to the bottom of the stairs.
So did she describe what the woman looked like then?
Silhouette, just like the hair of a woman, you know.
Yeah.
Long hair, so... Yeah, she goes, it's just that sort of look, and then, wait, what? You know, double take.
Did you do any research at all then about previous occupants of the house?
I wouldn't know how to do it even now. I don't know how to do that sort of thing. I know that my deed said 1900 it was built, and it was in an area where, obviously, a mill house. We had a mill up there at one time. It was a workhouses, you know. Yeah, all I've done other than live there was I went back and put my ghost team's business card through the letterbox with a little note saying, "Have you had any weird experiences? I used to live here, and here's my number." And never heard anything. But
did you see a for sale sign up the week after?
No. I sold it to a lad, a bloke, actually older than me, probably 10 years older than me at the time. And figured he'd still live there, but I know now it's got hanging baskets outside, which wasn't really his type of thing.
No, unless of course.
Yeah, I go past now and I'm like, oh, that house still gives me the creeps, and I still do have nightmares about it. They're much less now. The idea of writing the book was, I'll get this all out. Yeah. I had nightmares at the time of writing it because I'm revisiting those memories.
Yeah,
and they faded off. But every now and again, I'll be just dreaming, and then suddenly I'm in the house, and I haven't sold it, and I'm stood in the front room, and the house is watching me, and I have to make a run for the door. That's just the feeling I get.
Yeah, it's interesting how you suddenly get these memories when you. I know when I started writing my books, you suddenly start remembering things that had been, you know, had been buried away in your memory for years and years. So yeah, it's great. It's a great way of remembering things that you wouldn't normally remember when you start sitting down and writing books. So when did you then decide that you wanted to put a team together to start doing investigations? And more to the point, how did you get the team together? How did you find the people, like-minded people who wanted to become involved in it?
So it was Halloween 2010, about a week before. I finished watching Most Haunted and I'm like, you know what? I sit here and I'm pointing at the TV going, that might be, you're saying it's a ghost, but it probably is something else. Because that's my mindset, to shoot it down, to sort of, I was brought up on like Arthur C. Clarke books.
Yeah.
And that was always with a very raised eyebrow. These people think they've seen a ghost. Who am I to say what they probably haven't? That was like the James Randi. Look at the guy, you know, he was like well known for shooting down Uri Geller and putting up like $1 million reward or whatever for someone to prove psychic, you know, to him.
Yeah,
the mindset of the country was always like, you're a bit mad if you think you've seen a ghost.
It was at the time. That's interesting. I've just, sorry again to interject, but yeah, you're right. I think at the time, I think the one thing that Most Haunted did, which was really good, and we could probably talk for hours about the pros and cons of Most Haunted, but I think one of the things that it did really well was it actually brought the subject out into the consciousness of the general public, I think. I mean, you know, I'm not saying that they had tens of millions of viewing figures, but the whole idea and the whole concept, I think, started to permeate out probably about 10, 15 years ago. And then obviously, you know, there was the court case and everything, which hit the national newspapers with obviously Derek Acora and you know, various things that were levelled at him. But I think that the one good thing that they did was to actually bring it out into the public consciousness, and for it not to be some sort of freaky, you're weird if you believe in ghosts. It was sort of like, you know, oh, okay, so, you know, you're a ghost hunter, great, tell me some stories, or, you know, you believe in ghosts, that's brilliant. There's no mocking anymore. It's all very much out there in the national consciousness, I think, now. It's acceptable, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, like you say, I think it brought the conversation, because it's like, did you watch Most Haunted? What did you think? And, oh, I once saw a ghost, and therefore you're allowed to speak about it, aren't you?
Yeah, you are. So you're sat there, you're watching an episode. Can you remember which episode it was, just as a matter of interest, or?
No, I have no idea. But I know that it was Halloween 2010, and I'm thinking, right, Google ghost hunts. Now, I knew there'd been some in Leeds, in asylums and something like that. And they're like £40 or £50. So I'm like, oof.
Yeah.
Like, you know, will my wife allow me to spend that on something she didn't even believe in? You know. Anyway, so I'm sad because she wouldn't watch Most Haunted with me because it's all not even real. So she'd have gone to bed and I'll be Googling it. And what do you know, in one or 2 weeks' time on Halloween, there is literally one down the road in a mill. And I'm like, well, that's seemed like fate, you know?
Yeah.
Like, not just like one in Leeds is like one on your doorstep next week or whatever. And I was like, all right. Well, so I sort of begged my wife to let me go to that. And I didn't want to go on my own. I took my sister, who was also, I'd got into Most Haunted. Mm. So we had this big discussion of, we will go and we will keep our eye on the team, because the team are probably there to fake things. You know, they make money off it. That's the point. So
yeah.
they will possibly do. We're looking out for Darren Brown's suggestion. We're looking out for, you know, we want to put our fingers on the glass. Me and my sister will sit opposite each other on a Ouija board so that anyone else, we can feel where the movement's coming from.
Yeah.
So that was a mindset. Even though I love ghosts, I'm thinking this is probably, you know, the mindset we should have.
Paranormal for profit is what a lot of people call it, in that, you know, it's making a profit out of pretending that there are, you know, shadows and ghosts. And, you know, so again, you know, perhaps are we going back to the, you know, the Most Haunted format?
Yeah. Well, it's entertainment, yeah. But it didn't go as I thought anyway. So we had an experiences, if you like, with my sister and I felt something walk through me, like, you know, stood in front of a fridge, like a waft of freezing. But then my insides, I've never ever had the feeling again, but my insides chilled. And then my back was cold, like the fridge was behind me.
Yeah.
And then my sister had that exact same thing. The cameraman of the ghost team was stood behind her. He just got knocked off his feet.
Wow.
Now I'm thinking, wow, is this what researching the paranormal is? We're going to physically get assaulted, and you know what I mean? It's weird how that never happened again. But I was like, whoa, is this what I'm actually getting involved in this if I go down this route? And I'm thinking, well, even if he had fallen over as a, oh no, you know, acting, he doesn't know what I felt in my body. He doesn't know what my sister felt, and he perfectly timed it. We were just like, oh my God. And my sister was like, oh, and then he fell over.
That's very odd. Yeah, that's very odd. Was there anything else happened that evening? And in fact, can you give us a sort of clue roughly whereabouts it was, this place?
Yeah, absolutely. It's in Illingworth, in Halifax.
Okay.
I think it's called, dare I say it wrong, Homefield Mills.
Okay.
Like that. It's in Illingworth.
Which is in Yorkshire for people who don't.
I'm sorry, don't know.
No, it's fine.
I'm talking to Craig because you're just down the road, like you know what I mean.
We're just over the hills, aren't we? Yeah.
We were all sat in a circle and talking about, we had a medium, obviously, so the medium saying on what they can feel and suggesting to our brains what might be going on. And that's all fair enough, but supposedly it picks up on these children who used to work in these mills. And my right leg went really cold. And I'm like, well, that's weird. You know, I mean, as I say, I'm skeptically intelligent. You know, I'm not like being succumbed to this suggestion. So I'm like, look, I have to admit, my leg feels weird. And oh yeah, there's a kid sat on your leg. And I can't put anything in that. Maybe there wasn't, but yeah. She's like, well, the kid seems to be attracted to you. And it was like, oh, that's weird why one leg would go cold and not both.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, I was like, you know, maybe I'm not going to be able to disprove all this. And then finally we get on the board with two other young, well, I say young, we were, I think I'm all over. But basically these other girls who were like 15 or something. So they were coming on this as guests themselves. And the four of us, me and my sister and these two women, were putting our finger on the glass thinking, well, now that the team member's not on the glass, this thing shouldn't move if they're faking it. And yet it moved as easily with just us. And it was like, well, this is baffling to me.
Yeah.
You know? which made me, the follow-up of the question is, what, how did I create the team? I followed on Facebook this group. I befriended the members. I went to see them privately. We spoke about, well, you know, like, I want to build a team. And, you know, they'd tell me about cases and what happened on those cases. And, yeah, just I joined their Facebook group. And there was another woman who was the predominant commenter. So I messaged her and said, hey, where are you from? And she was like, Haworth, which is only down the road.
Yeah, it is, yeah, yeah.
And so the next thing you know, I'm going to meet up with Sue of my team, and I come across an advert for someone else in Haworth who is actually a ghost team.
Right.
I reach out to Pennine Paranormal, and Si is the runner, and he's like just the most welcoming person. He's like, hey, come up. Yeah, we haven't been going too long, but let's meet up. So Sue, myself and Si of Pennine Paranormal, we met up in this pub in Haworth, and we all just splurged to each other how much we liked this and what we believed and what equipment we used, and agreed to meet up for an investigation. Now, Si of Pennine Paranormal was all scientific Norwegian boards. He was very much like, the meter has to read what it is. I don't want us any mediumship, you know. But I was like, I've just done the Ouija board and I think there's something in it. And he was like taken with it straight away when we had what we had on our first night. He was like, well, that's just weird. I didn't think it would be, you know, so good. So yeah, the three of us started on our journey, and then through Facebook, it's just like, oh, I'm interested in the paranormal. And, you know, people who were the most interested tended to get on the team. And then those basic people, the structure is still who my team is now through different versions and going away and coming back. But, yeah, same bunch of friends, really.
So the last time we spoke was back in September, and we had a chat. You told me some really interesting stuff actually about Haworth and some of the investigations you've done there. Where have you been doing your investigations since then, since we last spoke?
Did I mention York to you? Do you remember? Because we met the most amazing spirit called Sam in York, and
you did.
Then travelled around with us.
You said you were going to go back and do some further investigations. Yes. So did you go back?
Yes. We were warned by Sam all leading up to it. Do not come back to my house. I will do this. I will do that. You know, you'll get harmed. And it was just like really exciting at the time. You know what I mean? We were all like, wow, this could be really good or nothing will happen.
Yeah.
It didn't happen how I thought it would. But what turned out was we made friends with Sam in the end. It's quite difficult to explain, really, but we're very trepidatious. But rather than be antagonising, we were sat in his house saying, look, Sam, I know you warned us off from coming. We have nothing but respect for you. I know we came and we passed over a spirit lady in this house, and you felt that was the wrong thing for us to do. There were enemies because he was harassing this woman spirit, and we saved her by, you know, stop bullying this woman. But yeah, we just praised him and hoped that would make him see that he was of value to our team, because he really was. In the time that we met him to the investigations all over Colne or whatever around this area, when he butted in, it was proper evidence. You know, it was like freezing cold. It was so strong on the Ouija board. This guy was like no other spirit, you know. So I was just saying thank you so much. And eventually, with the help of a woman I met in Ilkley, a ghost woman called Ruth, who had stayed with him all the time. They're always a pair. He'd have a go at us, but she'd be trying to keep him back under control. And Sam said, you've got demons attached to you. Now, yeah, you can raise an eyebrow and all that, because I was the same. But I can only tell you how it played out. He said, you've got demons from when you and Lucy on my team did your rituals evening, The rituals evening was when Lucy and I, we were only the only two available. So we decided to stream us doing all the things we could think of to show that they weren't real. The Charlie with the pencils, the Bloody Mary, even stupid things like Candyman. We drew pentagrams on the floor. We did all the things that viewers were like, oh, no, I'd never do that. We were showing that, it's fine. We did a voodoo doll. You know, it was like, chuck everything at it. And then it became apparent that we did have, allegedly, these two somethings attached to us from that evening. And in York, we were pretty much told off by the spirits, saying, you don't realise what you've messed with. Spelt on the Ouija board, symbols have power. You know, it's like, now I've always preached that the power of intention seems to be such a big thing in the paranormal field. So it seemed that we had conjured something up. Sam even went on to name them, and then researching them, you find that they are supposedly demonic, and even gave who they were related to. So we're like, well, I mean, we don't know. I had no negative impact from them, but Lucy, her bad luck, let's say, really amped up for a good 6 months after that evening. Her health went down. And ever since York, when Sam and Ruth did a kind of cleansing of us from this demonic attack, if you like, which was all played out through Estes method, which is where you put headphones on and somebody else listens to Necrophonic. And now you can take all of it with a pinch of salt, but to have lived through it, it seemed like that. I just take it as, okay, if you say that's what happened, we summoned something up, you helped get them off us, and Lucy's voice was mimicking what she was hearing in the headphones, not knowing what was going on at our board because she's in a separate room. So Sam is talking through Lucy in a way, and then also this demonic voice saying, get Chris's eyes. It's like, well, it's saying my name. It just felt totally like the voice is coming through on this random app was aimed right at me. And then I had a problem for a couple of months after doing that. It's all very much coincidental, but how many coincidences, you know, can you brush off? Ultimately, we get friends with this Sam. We learn that his name's Sam Durst. Being in York, I could research through the day, and the house we were at there, it said, oh, it's the oldest house in York. And I thought, come on, I'm sure everyone says they're the oldest house in York. That's a massive claim. The one house that we're in is the oldest in a medieval place. So I go to the library and it says yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when did it date back to then?
Oh God, I don't know. I've probably got it on my phone somewhere. That's not the sort of information I go around with in my head. But yeah, I'm sure I can find that again. But yeah, that's it. That's what the library said in this dusty old stone gate. It's in Stonegate. But okay. I'm happy to be disproved because I can't back it up. But yeah, I can't imagine. Just one house. You know what I mean? So, how many houses did they build?
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. So when did he die then, or more to the point, when did he live?
I remember when we first spoke to him, when he was alive, with his nanny that he raped and felt it was his property. This is why we fell out. That was 1800. So that's when he was. So really, from when the house was built, he's a modern. He himself was a modern spirit.
Yeah.
He was a money lender, so very affluent because he was in charge of the cash. Big businessman at the time. He had his hand in printing, which I then found out that Stonegate was a massive printing industry. It's another tick. Like, I didn't know that. You know, all these things. But beyond that sort of fact that you can check, Sam would tell us things about ourselves. I think I had him in my house I wouldn't tell the team what he did or said, you know, what he did or what I said to him. Mm. And on the Ouija board afterwards, I'd say, I think you're in my house. Is that right? And he'd say, yes. I'd say, well, what did you do or where were you? And he would be able to say not only what he did activity-wise that only I knew, he would say my response. My sister would go to York and go into his backyard and say something. And then months later, she would say, what did I say when I came to your home? And Sam would be able to say the words that she said. And yeah, he did that with all of us. He'd give information about our children, you know, that they'd done that day. And it's like he's always with you, watching you, or has access to that. And spirits that I've spoke to over the years all seem to have an existence out of our time.
Mm.
When we've said, okay, then, like if I'm on a Ouija board with you, Craig, I'd say, tell me what Craig's house number is. And if he did your house number, you'd say, well, Chris don't know my house number. But that is correct. Mm. And we've all had, you know, I know we're close as a team, but I don't go as far as knowing their house numbers. And so, you know, when they were all correct, it's like, what is this knowledge that we've tapped into?
So how did he communicate with you normally then?
Only on the Ouija board. We're not mediums. We're nothing like that. We're simply
right.
What they can, you know, convey through the Ouija board. That's our preferred method.
So, would you sort of hold a Ouija board session regularly then, in order to be able to talk to him? And also, the other thing that just struck me as well is, were you not sort of quite scared about the fact that he knew so much about your family, and he was obviously following you around? He knew about your children. Did that not worry you somewhat?
Whether I'm just ignorant to that sort of thing, we had a bit of a tussle with Sam. He'd give it all the threats, and so I'd take my finger off. We'd all take our fingers off the glass, because that's when he would talk to us, because the Ouija board's our thing. And he'd threaten us, and I'd say, well, okay, then make a massive noise, or, you know, push me or something. And when you take your finger off the glass, we're not providing him with energy.
Mm.
And so then nothing would happen. And so I'd get more confident in going, you say all these things, Sam, but, you know, without us giving you energy, you're powerless, because we thought it was a bully. Whereas now my mindset is, he's probably in the right. I know that times were different and we're never going to agree on his actions.
Mm.
But I walked into his house, did seemingly get rid of a spirit that he thought belonged to him, then tried to banish him from his own home. How does he see me?
Mm.
You know what I mean? And that was disrespectful. And so we had him as this bully, and then he ended up helping us out in the end and giving us great activity. I'm like, you know what? I'm in the wrong, really.
Mm.
So,
you've sort of encroached on his...
Yeah.
Existence. Was he aware that he was dead?
Yeah, absolutely. And I said, look, do you want to be passed over? Because we've done that before. Do you want? He's stuck here, and he's like, no, I'm king here. You know, he's in a B&B. It's dressed up somewhat to be spooky, because it just is spooky. Mm. So they've kind of, the people who own the B&B have doubled down and called it, you know, the Haunted Chambers in York. All right. It's got a Ouija board that's magnetised, so as soon as you pull the planchette away, it flicks back to the middle, possibly spooking some people. You know, do you know what I mean? It's a bit of a haunted funhouse kind of vibe.
Mm.
But obviously, we take our own equipment and we do our own methods. Mm. So he's got all these people coming in. Half of them coming in and saying, well, this isn't haunted, it's nothing. But then other half saying, oh, I didn't like it, I've had all these experiences. Two Mormons apparently booked, and then within 2 hours, they says, not staying there, you know, for whatever reason. So you've got a 50-50 split of people actually saying, yep, yeah, it's all true, it's a horrible place. And seemingly some people that Sam said had done rituals or some stuff to actually elevate his power. That's why he was stronger than all the other spirits we'd ever found. He's got a complete, you know, you think about his week, he's got two nights of one set of people, then another two nights of another, constant stream of energy coming through there to to take. So I think that's why he was quite happy. Thank you very much. Leave me here. And why would I want to move on, you know?
So is he still with you at the moment then?
Well, since we haven't done anything really since York, because, you know, the winter drew to a close and Christmas. And so now it feels like we've got both not only Ruth but Sam behind us, and we're starting a new phase next week to start some new investigations. And so our mindsets have changed. We've definitely got a different outlook and maybe a bit more. We thought we were respectful anyway, but we're going to be even more respectful. Like I say, think about their perspective of you as you're interrupting their place.
Their existence, yeah.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll just, because the activity was getting crazy from the 10 years before when you could always put a question mark over things that were happening.
Mm.
You know, like, well, it could be just us reading into it. Just activity ever since Sam came along seemed to really amp up to where you'd ask for a bang on the shutter and it would be really loud. Mm. And there's only you on the board there. It's like, wow. It'd make you jump out of your skin, you know.
So he could manipulate objects in the same way that a poltergeist can.
Yeah. I mean, I literally have had knocks, which you don't expect. You ask every time for knocks to knock back. Mm. And you might get the cooling of a building, a tick, or a drip of a water. You're like, nah, that's not enough. That's nothing. To then suddenly go bang, and you're like, my God. You know, I jumped, because in all the years I've asked, that's not something that normally happens. But activity was ramping up and up. I'm asking and I'm getting. And so I want to see where that takes us.
Mm.
Every experience is a learning chance, isn't it? Opportunity.
It is, yeah. So where's your upcoming investigations going to be then? Have you decided when?
Well, we've been allowed to go to this mill where I've wanted to go for ages, linked to where my brother used to work in Bradford. It's a wool mill. And, after years of wearing the owner down, and I think even though he's sceptical, he was like, well, I know your brother and you're obviously just like him, level-headed. And now you've piqued my curiosity, because you're saying that you were a sceptic and now you're a believer. Then I'm curious. Mm. And so I've got, you know, he's basically like, yeah, I will. You come in, I'll come along and see what you guys do. So finally I got access to this mill, which even he himself, totally sceptical, said one time we were in with just one other guy on a weekend, and we could hear the woolen, there's like carts on wheels with you, heavy things get pushed around. And you could hear somebody walking with a cart all the way on the top floor above them. And they just went, oh, you know what, let's come back Monday. And these are, you know, sceptical people. So there's something there. And then what's the week after? Come on, brain. It'll come back to me. But we've got somewhere the week after as well.
So you've got quite a lot to look forward to in the new year then. And we'll have to come back again. We'll have to have another chat at some point in the future about your ongoing investigations. You've done some quite interesting ones very close to where I live as well. I know you mentioned you'd been to Stonyhurst Cemetery. The last chat we had, you were telling us about that. So I have to say you've got some fascinating stories. What just remind us again the name of the book and where people can find it?
Yeah, it's on Amazon only. Search Into the Darkness, Becoming a Ghost Hunter by Chris Whitehouse. And eventually you'll get further into the darkness, Becoming a Believer, the sequel, which takes the journey further on through these last few fantastic years.
Yeah. Are you going to be talking about your relationship with Sam in that book?
Yes. It'll be... there was another thing that happened in York, if I can just tell you that.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
This is just another example of activity getting better than normal. We had a girl come to the board saying, lost my shoe. And we were like, you've lost your shoe? Who's lost your shoe? How old are you? It's been, you know, oh, I'm seven, I'm a girl. Lost my shoe, lost it, whatever. You're very young. Oh, where have you lost it? Oh, it's in the stream. Right. why is it in a stream? We all thought, oh, what have you done that for? Being really playful and finding it amusing. And then starts talking about her dad and this other man called, she called the Hat Man. And as little elements of the story started coming up, she said, oh, it's a red, it's a red shoe. And she was really obsessed with this shoe. And one of our streaming viewers, I saw a comment go up and I went, oh, this is, what was that? And it turns out the person at home had actually put these details in and it had brought up a real case.
Right.
And it was called the Red Shoe Murder in York, in the place where she... So then we're suddenly like, what? You know, we're busy working. And then we got someone on the team who was sat away from the board to sort of start to look herself. Mm. So then she could see the real article of this unsolved murder, which is a cold case, and then the family were still looking for answers. And because she'd say, okay, then where did you die? Who found you? Mm. Where did they find you? And so was at the board, just like spelling it and going on the, you know, but your young boy found her on the wasteland behind a house. And she's like, yeah, young boy, looking at the article, all these things were right. And then she actually pulled up a picture of this girl, Norma Dale, can't quite remember. I said, don't show us the picture. I said, Norma, describe to us what it looked like. We haven't seen the picture. Mm. And she described her hair, a fringe. And so, yeah, when we saw the picture, just what made you go cold?
Mm.
You know, all these details that were accurate to a news article that we hadn't seen.
Yeah. Wow. You could probably help the police then in some circumstances. They're not interested. No.
Nope. Because, even though the family, you know, were looking out, it's like I contacted the papers and said, look, that news article that you did, I have information that came through a Ouija board.
And
you're not answering. Fair enough.
So have you got a website, social media, YouTube?
Yes, YouTube, White House Investigations, Facebook, White House Investigations, www.whitehouseinvestigations.co.uk. 10 years of write-ups are on there that I mentioned earlier. And, just give us a follow, please. That would be really beneficial.
Yep, and also buy your book, of course.
I would really appreciate that. Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, great stuff. Well, it's been great talking to you, Chris. Thanks very much. As last time, really fascinating stories. Some really quite thought-provoking things that have happened to you over the years, and I'm sure they'll carry on. We'll definitely catch up again sometime in the future, especially when your second book, whenever that is, if you let me know when that's finished and out, we can catch up and have a chat about your follow-up book. One thing I will say to you about a follow-up book is it's a bit like that difficult second album that musicians often find when they've had a successful first album. Just enjoy writing it and enjoy putting all your stories down and all your experiences and good luck with your investigations.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks for having me back.
No worries. Thank you. It's been my pleasure. Thank you. You can visit my website at www.craigbryant.co.uk. Paranormal Pendle will return, and remember to keep watching the shadows.